Just before we dive into today's podcast, this episode is brought to you by Bloomreach Engagement. Now, they're an AI-powered marketing automation platform that personalizes the online shopping experience for your customers. Now, Bloomreach brings the power of AI in three ways: your customers' real-time data, the anonymous website visitors, and the Shopify data, so you know exactly what customers want, when they want it, and where to show it to them. Now, Bloomreach also enables Shopify companies to connect all of this understanding across all channels, so online, offline, including mobile, really to create the most personalized campaigns, engaging conversations with customers, you know, and most importantly, to deliver a shopping experience that's unique to each shopper. Now, Bloomreach marketing automation solution integrates seamlessly with all of your existing tech stack. It aggregates data across the entire customer journey. And as I mentioned, it really empowers you as the founder or as the marketer really to act on all of these insights from a single platform. Now, the company has over 30 AI patents and serves over 850 global brands. So you can learn more, ecommercefastlane.com/Bloomreach, or you can go direct, bloomreach.com, and get started today.
You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company powered by Shopify. Listen to real conversations with partners and subject matter experts as they share proven practical strategies, platforms, and the best Shopify apps to help you accelerate your business. The time is now for you to improve efficiencies, grow revenue, profit, and lifetime customer loyalty. Please welcome your host, startup founder, and strategic advisor, Steve Hutt.
Well, hey there. Welcome back to E-Commerce Fastlane. I'm your host, Steve Hutt. Now, thanks so much for tuning in today. You know, I know there's so many podcast choices out there. I massively appreciate the fact that you're taking time and listening to the show. We're on all of your favorite podcast apps, including Apple and Spotify and YouTube. We're also streaming now live on Amazon Music. So if you consume any of your podcasts on Amazon, you're a Prime member, I believe you get access to Amazon Music. You can actually like and subscribe directly there and get notified when a new show is being released, like today's episode. And so today I'm excited. I have this very interesting episode because typically, as you all know, I usually have marketing partners in the Shopify ecosystem, or I'll have platform and kind of app partners that connect to Shopify and the sort of problems they're solving. Decided to flip it a bit today because now there's been some growing demand for understanding kind of the entrepreneurial story behind brands that are on Shopify or other platforms, and they're making their way over to Shopify. And that's exactly my guest today. His name is Alex Back, and he's the CEO and founder of a company called, I love this name, Couch.com. And so it's really exciting. It's, you know, honestly, I love the name. I don't know how much it costs to buy this name, but anyway, I'm sure we're going to unpack a lot of this. So hi, Alex, welcome to the show.
It only costs my life savings. No big deal.
I believe it. I bet you the person was cyber squatting on that name forever.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting story too, but thank you for having me, Steve. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. So as you mentioned, this entrepreneurial story, it's near and dear to my heart because number one, I've had a startup. I had visionpros.com, you know, from the early days selling contact lenses and eyewear. I'm here in Canada, then expanded internationally, did my thing, took an exit 4.5 years later. And there's been, and on Shopify, and it's just like along the way, you learn a lot of failures, a lot of wins, and a lot of partnerships, things didn't work out. But at the end of the day, there are some learnings here. I think that's why you're here today. Number one, let's hear about the founding story. Let's talk about entrepreneurship in general, kind of how you fit into the mix. I know you have an interesting story with a previous startup and an exit and now involved with Couch.com. So let's hear a little bit first. We'll kind of dabble our way through this. Just the early days, like how did you get involved in entrepreneurship and your first startup?
Yeah, absolutely. So my former company is called Apt2B, APT2B, and we were sort of early adopters of the Shopify platform. It wasn't a no-brainer back then. Yeah. Like it was something that was sort of just emerging and becoming popular. Prior to that, we were on a Magento site that was quite literally too difficult for us to manage on our own. So the switch over to Shopify wasn't very sort of typical one for us. Well, we were at the time a smaller brand. But yeah, the origin story of Apt2B, which is an online furniture brand, was that my friend and business partner was in the furniture industry. I used to be an actor and just worked in furniture on the side with him in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And he had this great idea. The idea was simply to sell furniture online.
Imagine that.
Because there was nobody doing it back then. Yeah. Amazing, right?
Yeah.
And that came from him being a sales rep. He was selling reclining couches to brands in California. He got an email one day from somebody at a company he had never heard of called CSN. And CSN was looking to open up an online account. So he reached out to the headquarters in Mississippi, super old school furniture, legacy manufacturer, and said, hey, can I open these guys up? They're like, well, we don't have an online division, but yeah, go for it. I mean, we'll see how it goes. So he opened up the account, did very little, just basically provided data, images, and things like that. One day he wakes up to an order. He's like, whoa, this is actually working. The next day, 3 orders, the next day, 10, and it sort of ballooned into something really big. CSN then became Wayfair, as we all may know. So we saw the writing was on the wall that there was some real power behind bringing furniture online. And that's really basically where we started. We just figured it out along the way. Thankfully, we got into the Shopify platform when we did, because it opened up so many doors for us. We were sort of furniture guys with a knack for marketing, certainly not technically inclined at the time, although I've learned many tricks along the way.
Yeah.
As we think we all have.
Right.
But yeah, it was slow going. Luckily, we didn't have that much competition for a few years. So we had time. We were pretty ahead of the game as an independent furniture retailer and were able to figure it out. So we stayed in the game long enough, played a slow and steady bootstrapped approach.
Yeah.
And eventually grew our company to the point of acquisition in 2018 by a sort of a mid-major furniture retail chain located in the Midwest.
Okay.
And they wanted to bolster their online presence and invest in a growing brand. And it was sort of a perfect match. We leveraged all of their logistics and operations capabilities, their buying power. We started selling different types of products for better margin and things of that nature. Some things worked, some things didn't. And I stayed on as COO for 4 years and grew the company immensely during that time. And then I left and started Couch.com, the place to find a couch.
So, okay, so Couch.com, okay, this is a phenomenal name, let's be honest. And I know, like, over the years, I've squatted on a few names too that I'm, you know how entrepreneurs, we always kind of think about, hey, maybe in the future, this might be valuable. And, you know, like, I own some names like CashLottery.com. People say, why do you want to own Cash Lottery for us?
Fun.
I don't know. I think at some point, like I've had it for 20 years, at some point there's a value to that. Who knows what that could be? And I'm sure someone sat on couch.com for a while too. Like, can you walk us through just quickly? Because I'm guaranteed there's people that when they start a brand new brand and having an exact match term like this from an SEO perspective is very interesting. And so I just want to hear your mindset around and the process that happened to actually acquire this domain. Because I think there's others listening that, hey, they have an idea for a brand, but they go to GoDaddy or, you know, some kind of tool and start doing some searches, and they find that a lot of them are taken and they're forced to have to go with a .co or others, or not exactly what they're looking for. So just want to understand your mindset around this domain and then how you're able to acquire it.
Yeah, absolutely. So somebody in my network reached out to me. They knew I was looking for a new opportunity after I left my former company. And at first I looked and I saw the price tag and I was like, well, that's not happening. And I moved on.
Yeah.
But then I actually was on a solo trip in Europe, in Norway, and I was sort of finding myself. And I had an aha moment that we all sort of hope and pray for.
Yeah.
Where I like saw the vision for what this could be and then sort of got myself pumped up enough to realize that I didn't know of anybody else in my network, in the furniture industry or otherwise, that could really do as much with this than I could.
Right.
So I thought, I was like, wow, I'm really uniquely poised. There's maybe a short list of people. So I was like, okay, let me really dive into this. And I started working through a broker. I started contacting the broker. The broker was fantastic and really was able to speak with me eloquently about the ins and outs of the domain and how it would work and things of that nature. Obviously, I started negotiating immediately, mostly to no avail, because the domain was owned, or it was owned by somebody who was very wealthy. They actually were part of the team. He and his brother created the product that became Google AdSense. And they sold it to Google about, I think, around 20 years ago for a lot of money. So negotiating and trying to get him to take a haircut on this specific domain was not easy. However, he is an entrepreneur, as am I, and we sort of came together. I pitched the idea that I had. He liked it. And we sort of made a deal to structure it financially in a way that made sense for both of us. So I'm very happy about that. And I'm super excited to have this domain, which has an X factor that has already been advantageous for us in our early existence.
Oh, 100%. Like, because I know when you sent your message to me, and then I saw that you're kind of in the early days, did some SEO research and just kind of seeing where you fit in the market. And then when I started digging in deeper about apartment 2B and said, okay, well, this is interesting. This is where Alex is right now and has made the right choice, definitely in the URL. And then that's a great building blocks now moving forward. And so exciting. Kudos to you. And I think it's interesting that you had were able to make a financial arrangement as far as still getting ownership to it, having some kind of legal agreement, potentially on the upside of profitability and growth and a lot of different things. Who knows how it's completely structured? That's kind of confidential. But you know, there is outright acquisition prices. Like, for example, there's a public case study out about retention.com being purchased, you know, for upwards of $800,000. And the answer was no, not in hope and life. But then, you know, at the end of the day, they made a decision that is better off I own it based on what their platform does. And he did pay the $800,000 to buy it. And same thing, half mortgaging your house and a lot of savings. But end of the day, he owns retention.com now,
right?
Which is what everybody wants to improve their lifetime value. They just retention strategies. We know the cost of acquiring that new, but it's how do we get the second sale, right? And that's retention for you. So I want to pivot a bit over about just like the online shopping market in general. And now we did buy some chairs recently. We have some bar stools that we bought recently from an online retailer here in Canada. And they came and they were fine. They were in smaller packages and I had to kind of build them together. But we're talking couches and chairs and large items that have to be on a truck and they come to the threshold. It's like getting a mattress delivered. I guess I want to understand the lay of the land. I think that's maybe one of the reasons why maybe there is as successful as online shopping is in large items like couches and other home items. It seems to me to think that traditional retail still wins, even though the same trucks probably that are available from a warehouse to the customer is the same as it would be if it was in the store. So I just want to kind of understand the choices of shopping, both traditional retail and then what it means now for couch.com more in the online space. Is it like selection? Is it fulfillment? Like I just trying to understand everything better now.
Yeah. So I'll start by saying that your hunches are pretty on target. When it comes to the online furniture space, the brands that stick around, because I've seen plenty of them come and go over the last decade and change, the brands that stick around really are very focused on the operations, logistics, and customer care needed to succeed in an online furniture business. A national furniture distribution channel is not easy to manage. And I think to sort of shrug that part of your business off or not give it its due focus is really a major misstep that I've seen a lot. And supply chain is part of that too. Some brands just had, you know, succumbed to supply chain difficulties over the last few years. Some have just not done a great job of keeping their online reputation very clean.
Right.
And I think that was sort of cornerstone to our ability to be competitive at Apartment 2B was really focusing on those things and having those buttoned up. So that's something I'm pretty proud of. What's interesting also, and sort of proof of both your hunches and what I just talked us through, is the fact that about 80% of the commerce in the furniture industry is still done on the brick and mortar level. That is a very, very large percentage. So what I was thinking, and part of my aha moment, was to bring the brick and mortar retailers back into the online space. Because the reality is that online shopping is for furniture and many big ticket items is truly an omni-channel experience for many people. And most people still need to see it in store. 80% of them in furniture will buy and make their purchases in store as well. So with Couch.com, part of our overall offering and value proposition is aggregating data from all of the mom and pop stores around the country the regional chains, brick and mortar chains, even the larger ones like the one that acquired my company. I got very familiar with their internal operations and marketing, and even some of the online retailers as well, and sort of democratizing the online space a little bit as much as we can to offer a marketing opportunity for all of these brands and for users to be able to find them, because nobody knows where to go to get a couch.
Right. I see. Okay. So this is getting more clear. So it really is at this point, I guess, in your journey right now, is not necessarily a private label brands of couches. It's more, number one, is more of a content play right now at the beginning. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So for couch.com, the whole point of our existence is to help people find a great couch. And at this point, those great couches are made by other people and not us at couch.com.
Correct.
So we are pointing people in the direction of online retailers, brick and mortar retailers. The entry point of the website is going to be an AI-powered quiz where we get some information from each user, essentially asking them, what are the most important things to you in your couch buying journey? Once we get that information, we'll provide them with results, both for online retailers that they may consider and brick and mortar retailers in their local area. Because the reality is that is how people shop for furniture. Most people go store and see something in person. So we figured, why not actually cater to that rather than trying to pretend that stores don't exist?
Hmm. And then I see on the footer, for example, I guess some of the brands that you're aligning with, like Restoration Hardware, and there's a few others down here. So it looks like you're doing a lot of interesting roundup articles around each particular brand. And I guess the thought process here is that in the future, you obviously are going to be on the radar of Restoration Hardware when they have organic reach and you both have kind of quote unquote shared customers or potential shared customers. They could go to Restoration Hardware and buy it, but the other opportunity is maybe they do go there and look, but then they do some online research, whatever he's going to do anyway. It's like, oh, there's one we looked at already. We already sat on it. We love it. The price is right. Buy now. Who knows where that's going to go to, if it's going to link as an affiliate or a partnership link over to Restoration Hardware to make the purchase, or maybe the other opportunity is that, no, these transactions are going to happen on our site and there's going to be, because I know both angles work, the affiliate partnership kind of road or the API connection from the platform and having the order show up in Restoration Hardware's admin for fulfillment of your customer. So I want to throw that out there that there's those options available. Where do you see couch.com going with this?
Yeah, it really depends. And, you know, like any startup, I consider our journey to be an iterative process. So I know how to do both. I've had personally experience leading teams. I've had a lot of experience in affiliate marketing. I've had a lot of experience in retailing on marketplaces and being a partner. So we really could go either way. The one differentiator is that if you take people's money, you have to be ready to serve them, even if you're not the one delivering the furniture, making it, or anything else.
Correct.
And our industry is still, you know, with any sort of national distribution of big ticket or large bulky items, it's a very high touch endeavor. So, and a lot of things go wrong, tons of challenges.
Yeah, 100%.
So all that to say, I think there's a lot more margin and potentially a better financial opportunity, but you have to weigh that against what sort of operational infrastructure we might need to be able to support and serve that.
Right. Yeah, and I'm glad you have that experience with that, because I think there's a couple different ways to go by it. And some brands choose just saying, hey, we have private label product and that's where the best margin is. And we're going to build a brand around that. And that's fine, but you can't be everything to everybody. And sometimes the marketplace opportunity is interesting too, where you're facilitating these kind of arrangements. And there is some, Shopify has some really interesting tech with some partners, like two or three that come to mind, and you probably know who they are, but it's interesting where literally you can go to another vendor, like the manufacturer, and grab SKUs and then have them be on your site to expand your product catalog with select SKUs that both parties agree that it can be shipped in a timely manner. And literally they could click the buy now button on couch.com or whatever brand. And then it literally shows up in both admins. And there's a financial arrangement that happens between the two parties to saying, hey, you're going to, Restoration Hardware, for example, you're going to fulfill this particular chair on behalf of my couch.com customer. My couch.com customer knows that because they got a receipt from me. They know exactly what's coming. And just how it all flows through technology and APIs now, that works like very, very well, as you are probably well aware. a lot of my listeners maybe don't realize that opportunity is there if you really can expand your product mix without having to buy inventory.
Yeah, and I have a lot to say about this. I think I started thinking and sort of organically about this years ago when, as a furniture retailer, we did a fantastic job producing, shipping, selling, marketing couches. However, the other product categories, we never really crushed it. I mean, we did well and we had, you know, certain, we'd come out with certain items that would be super hot or would gain traction, be written about, et cetera. But I always kind of had this idea in my head, like, why don't we just partner with someone who really does a good job of this? A great example is outdoor furniture. Like never were able to sell outdoor furniture. So you see this more and more today with greater technological offerings, as you just talked about. But you see sort of like situations where an outdoor furniture company will have a placement, so to speak, on an indoor furniture company. And they would literally just use each other to leverage each other's audience and operational infrastructure to sell more furniture. I think it's great.
Yeah. I just think other opportunity here, and once again, I'm spitballing some ideas that, you know, this might open up some of our listeners' ideas about the influencer side of the market too. You know, you're saying that you're promoting potentially other people's products at some point, maybe your own white labeled or your own branded product. And that's all fine and dandy, but it's just, how do you get the word out in the street? Like, as far as that you are available and this is a great product. And just what's your mind around the whole influencer, user-generated content kind of experience? It's clear that Apartment 2B is, you know, very much involved with that. I think you had, sure. I don't know, Okendo or whatever tools you're using. We'll get into tech stack in a few minutes, but just want to hear your mindset and operation around influencers and acquiring them and how you prefer them to promote the brand that you're involved in.
Yeah, great. Great question. I think the biggest overarching thought to present here in this conversation is the fact that not all influencers or affiliates or partners are created equal. And the nuance to which you have to approach these types of things for them to be successful is similar to that of any algorithm that we're all trying to crack, you know, when it comes to organic social media or SEO. It is as nuanced and specific and oftentimes as sort of random as a lot of these other things. So to be more direct or clear, furniture influencers by and large do not work. When you think of influencer, we think of, you know, someone on Instagram or TikTok promoting your product who has a big following or even a dedicated small following in a specific place. So furniture is a very difficult thing to influence people to buy.
Right.
You can't really convince somebody that they need a new couch if they're not looking for one already. So an example of how taking a nuanced approach might be better, going with an influencer who normally promotes fashion with 3 million followers versus somebody who gives tips on where to get a great bargain on furniture who has 10,000 followers, the bargain hunting affiliate or partner may be so much more effective. So much more effective. That being said, I think there's value in every sort of affiliate or partnership relationship that you might have or influencer relationship, because what we used to do at Apartment 2B is really just understand that these were great content creators for us. And even if we were promoting that content to our own audience, it was still very valuable. We got great images and testimonials and, you know, there are ways to leverage it. If you have your goals specifically set and realistically set, I think it can be very successful.
I agree on the UGC part too. A lot of brands I've managed, they were able to forge great relationships. And there is some tech out there too that can help facilitate kind of the legal ownership of UGC created content and then flipping those into ads like on TikTok and on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. And they worked extremely well. I think a lot of it was kind of pandemic fueled, that it's just kind of, you know, we couldn't go into a studio and spend $5,000 to produce something for a half day. You literally had someone like literally do it in their home, but it just was more authentic. And once again, depends on the product that you're trying to sell. At the end of the day, there is technology again to get the rights ownership to that content and have it available and flipping into ads. Because hey, if it's already doing well as an influencer, it'll do really well if it's a paid ad, right?
Absolutely. And that's another great way to leverage that type of content. You hit the nail on the head.
So I want to talk about tech stack a bit too. That's kind of what over the years I've been having this podcast is people love to understand, get under the hood, so to speak, about what choices people made. Now, currently, well, sorry, I know Apartment2B definitely was an early Shopify adopter. Since Couch.com is currently more of a content play right now, where we're just trying to get a foothold in the marketplace that you really understand everything from where to buy before you buy and couch care and reviews. And you have a lot of great content, like hundreds and hundreds of pages. And so I think over time, that's going to reap a lot of rewards for you, like solving problems. It's all this EAT algorithm from Google about expertise and authoritativeness and trustworthiness. And I think you're building that with an absolutely fantastic domain name. So kudos to you. That's where you're headed with, at least on the WordPress side. I'm curious to know about what you chose on Apartment2B for tech stack on the Shopify side. That's the bulk of people listening today. And then what are you kind of applying towards maybe either a headless opportunity on couch.com or a subdomain with a Shopify store on branded? I'm just curious to kind of where it's headed outside of strictly a content play today.
Yeah, absolutely. So being an early adopter of Shopify, it allowed us to be very dialed in to many of these sort of third-party integrated applications and service providers that were just coming up.
Right.
And we always were very nimble and very willing to be a test audience. We sought out opportunities with people who were emerging and just getting started, whether it was, hey, we need a brand to join for free to be a case study. We have no reviews in the App Store on Shopify. Can we use you? We always said yes to those opportunities if it made sense.
Yep.
Because it brought us great access to people at the top at places like Klaviyo and Okendo and Attentive Text Messaging. Octane AI makes fantastic quizzes. They were like the first people who came out. It's a great sort of example. Like they came out, we used their quizzes and used, they had like a Facebook Messenger integration, which was fantastic back in the day. That's when people were using Facebook Messenger like a ton. And we leveraged that for our brand. And we had something really cool and innovative to talk about. We sort of moved away from the quiz strategy for Apartment2B because we had other things. But now in couch.com, I've been talking to those guys a lot and we're very friendly over the years. I'm part of their sort of collective
Matt and Ben. Yeah.
So Matt and Ben, they're great guys. And like, you know, I filmed a testimonial video for them like over 10 years ago and we're still talking. And it's relationships like that, that cultivate them at an early stage. And sometimes they don't amount to anything. And sometimes it can really pay dividends down the road.
I love the Octane tool too. I've met Matt and Ben multiple times at multiple conferences. And I'm also part of the same collective that you were involved in.
Oh, Steve, we're like family.
Yeah, see, I had no idea. That's cool. And then was there any opportunity? I have a lot of people are DMing me about live selling right now currently too. Was Apartment2B ever involved in any kind of live selling kind of product releases or scheduled things with influencers? And if so, were there any tools that were used to do like live selling opportunities?
Yeah. So live selling, I think, has evolved a lot. I mean, go to TikTok right now. It's, you know, like the Wild West over there. But
yeah,
I think we did sort of some earlier versions of that at Apartment2B, both on like a larger scale and smaller scale. So I'm trying to think of the name. There was like one platform that was like a home shopping network for furniture that sort of came and went. But then there was one that was super hot for a long time called FabFitFun.
Oh, yeah.
And FabFitFun had this like a home shopping network type strategy where they had like a literally in LA here where I live and where a business was located, they had a studio and it was run like a live TV studio and had all the bells and whistles. And I remember I went there a number of years ago and we brought a couch and we just wanted to see like, could we sell a couch live on their network? We had tons of engagement. We didn't sell a lot. Again, it's difficult. Furniture is just, it's very specific. So we were sort of cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
Then again, there are other situations we've been involved in. We, part of our brand building at Apartment2B was being partnered with Costco.
Mm.
And even though Costco wasn't necessarily the most fashion forward, cool brand to be associated with, that's a brand that can sell a lot of product because they have a loyal following. And it's really, so the fundamentals are the same. The loyal following, they're telling them this is a very good deal. They're creating a sense of urgency. It's for a limited time. And then they just leave us to do the rest, which is provide great images, great product, great service. And that was something that worked in person on, like, we did road shows here in Los Angeles and all of Southern California, where we would go in for 10 days and sell our couches, you know, like just like they have the hummus people there, And we did it online, which was immensely successful. Costco.com, sort of these like online events. So not necessarily today's version of live, like influencery type selling, a good example of how it can really work and how it can have a lot of flair and like a lot of luster attached to it, but maybe not be so conversion focused.
Yeah. Very interesting. I'll talk about the Shark Tank side of it too, because I know that a lot of times whenever a Shark Tank deal was closed, one of their claim to fame, like I think Scrub Daddy and a few others that actually got in there on Shopify, they got into Costco. I think Squatty Potty, you can rattle off all of these kind of products that did extremely well and then direct to consumer, but getting these retail deals. But as soon as you get into Costco or get into Walmart or Target, you've pretty much have kind of made it. And I just remember seeing some of the brands in Costco, like actually like on the shelf physically. I know their online is a little bit more robust with more product that's not on the shelf, but it's so interesting how they angle it. Margins are low, but man, brand awareness is just like through the roof.
Through the roof. Yeah. I mean, on in-store, online, there's tons and tons of traffic. So yeah, leveraging traffic where you can, even if maybe it wasn't for us in this specific case, but even if it's a break-even enterprise, I mean, you have to look at things a little bit through different lenses sometimes, like free eyeballs to something. That's why we had products on Amazon. We never really sold much furniture on Amazon, but understanding that Amazon is this like incredibly well-trafficked aisle of many things, we use that to, as a way to raise brand awareness.
Yeah, it's a necessary channel. There's no doubt about it. All the brands that I work with, I always tell them, like, don't put your full catalog on there unless you really want to, you know, and don't put all SKUs and all sizes and all. Let's get some brand awareness out there and like this baked in audience. I 100% agree with you. And then people, as they do their searching, will learn more about, oh, wow, that's a really cool product. And they're going to go directly and have a look. And that's when you have everything about all of your SKUs and all of your products and your offers. And we know that Amazon really, I mean, it's there for a reason. It's 10% of total GMV for online transactions in North America, for sure. And the other 10% comes from all the Shopify stores, pretty much. It's kind of 50-50. They're one and Shopify's 4 million stores. But it's just like at the end of the day, it's just like it's smart to put some SKUs on Amazon just for that. I mean, even putting a few SKUs on Etsy, it's this multi-channel approach of, I'm not going to put my full catalog on there because I'm not prepared for that and the work effort that goes along and the customer service that goes along with being truly omni-channel. But you got to get some SKUs up there. And there is definitely going to be a residual effect of driving traffic back to your direct-to-consumer site, and then, which is higher margins, don't have to pay any seller fees and things like that.
Right. Yep. Well said.
So I want to talk about AI now. So that's the, it certainly was 2023's word of the year, no doubt, with ChatGPT, and then it exploded and it's gone nuts. It's no different this year in 2024 now, where, you know, now governments are getting involved and deep fakes and like there's lots of craziness going on, but there's also some positive things I believe are going on. Even Shopify is really on the bandwagon. Their winter editions just came out and they're talking about all these Shopify magic, and there's lots of AI powered opportunities that are available to Shopify brands. And there's some external tools that are available now too for direct to consumer brands to help with creating ads and creating product descriptions and creating images and things like that. I'm going to throw it back to you. What are you currently using, or what do you feel that you might be using in the future? Is there certain things that have been on your radar about how you could start leveraging AI for your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the operative word for me is scale.
Okay.
And this concept of couch.com is one that has tremendous scale because we intend to incorporate all, or if not all, many, very comprehensive list and laden with data and products and information about list of retailers across the country.
Right.
So the first thing is that we're using AI to help us scale in ways that are otherwise would not be available to us. For instance, aggregating data, finding things, using sort of, for lack of a better term, smart technology to get information from users and point them in the right direction. To be more direct, like we're trying to create this immense database and service platform without having to like have every single product and page have like 14,000 Shopify tags on it. So, yeah. You know, the tech partner that we're working with is fantastic. Okay. And we're sort of developing a strategy of aggregating data and really getting a sense of what customers are looking for without making them do too much work and without us doing too much manual work on the back end. And that's why I say scale, because from a sort of a back end perspective, current AI technology is allowing us to have a scalable idea that's possible, that is not 100% manual, like we're going in the yellow pages and searching for furniture stores and calling them up. We're going to be getting that a lot of this data in a very sort of auto-magically enhanced sort of way.
I love this. I find it a lot now where there's a lot of tools, GPTs and stuff that will go out, crawl a site, and then helped with the self-directed kind of chat experience, either to content or product from within chat. And there's lots of vendors that are doing that. And then, you know, a lot of times you could literally name the bot, like, you know, I don't know what names you could call yours, like Sofa Seeker, or I don't know, there's like Couch Finder or Lounge Buddy. I mean, who knows? You can make a really cool name for the AI bot that can be used for customer service. And that's part of the deal. Or no, there's the self-serve model of learning more about couches or learning more about product X, whatever that is. And then, no, I'm looking for this type of product and having it being intelligent enough to know, well, based on my product catalog or my partner's catalogs, we believe that X, Y, and Z are probably right for you. And oh, and by the way, we've written a comparison between these beanbag chairs from the three major players, and there's the link to it. So I'm going to throw that out there. I love spitballing ideas.
What you just said was a way better way of saying what I had previously said. I mean, I'm just trying to find the words to explain the thoughts in my head, but you just did it better than I did. So
that's fun.
No, that's exactly right. We want to offer. I mean, and you see it out there today, what you just described in other instances. It just hasn't really hit the furniture space yet. And so I'm really trying to have us seize the opportunity. And as you said, if, you know, customer does a little bit of work and we interpret what they're looking for and point them in the right direction and educate them along the way. Ultimate goal of which being to create comfort enough to cause conversion.
Yeah, 100%. So we got into the AI, we got into a lot. We got into tech stack, we got your brand story, we've got the plan now with the content that's WordPress powered at this point. Do you see at some point with technology to be able to connect to Shopify for either fulfillment on your own site or somehow through a partner site, through an API connections? I guess what I want to get clear, because typically a lot of people that are listening, they're like, hey, we have a Shopify store, or we're considering to get a Shopify store because we believe that's kind of the default install for direct to consumer. You're not quite there yet. You were with Apartment 2B, clearly an early adopter Shopify, but now doing this content strategy and building partnership arrangements and potentially AI and recommendation engine and quizzes and things like that, it's very interesting where you're headed. I'm just trying to get your mind around, where do you think it's going to go into the future as it relates to currently with WordPress, and then how Shopify might fit into that mix?
Yeah, great question. So for me, I think Shopify, so we're building a platform on Shopify while we have built a content site on WordPress and have been supporting that for the last 6 to 8 months since we got started. So the reason we're building on Shopify is because every startup business, and I said this earlier in our podcast, every startup is really an iterative process. To say that, you know, we have a very clear roadmap for the next number of years would be foolish.
Yeah, exactly.
So all that to say, I feel, and we feel, that Shopify affords us the best opportunity to achieve scale while being an iterative business. Right. So things like what we've already discussed a little bit, just integrations of third-party sort of marketplace connecting applications is very, very much on our radar. And even in the very short term, we're partnered with a company called Stack Labs.
Okay.
the CTO of Couch.com was formerly at VaynerCommerce, okay. And before that, Lucid Fusion, which became VaynerCommerce after they sold their company to Gary Vaynerchuk. And our tech partner is fantastic. They have a proprietary WordPress Shopify connector through their CMS that is a proprietary CMS instance that leverages Shopify. And this allows us to have a whole bevy of WordPress content without using a subdomain or a third-party connector piece. So basically, we have built this out, or we have built this out for Apartment2B, and it was very successful for our organic content marketing approach. And we intend to do the same for Couch.com. So even though Shopify isn't the obvious choice for a content-heavy website, it's not the fastest. And once we start building it out, it'll likely get slower, for instance. But it affords us the most opportunity to sell product in the future, to market product, and to house all of our content. So it was sort of the meeting of all of the requirements we have as a business right now.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good to know that you know, I agree with you that it's really hard to have a roadmap like this, because it would be foolish to know where you're going to be a year from now and 2 years from now, because there's a lot of variables at play, especially when you kind of factor in Google into the mix with kind of Google's new search experience coming soon. And anybody listening, how do you become the natural choice for solving people's problems? And you know, a lot of it is Google choosing to what they're going to display in their AI. Right now, it's like rolled out to 1% right now as they're testing it, but it's going to take up a lot of the real estate. I mean, SEO is not dead, because there still is this whole expertise and authoritativeness and trustworthiness I spoke about. It's just that's really important. And I think that's where you're headed, is being that trusted source as it relates to buying couches. Maybe not buying them online at this point, but it certainly is going to have the information about cleaning and the type of fabric. I know we talked offline before recording. I have horrible fabric on my 20-year-old couch and chairs. Just having young family and non-cleanable, and twice you've had cleaners in and steam clean and this, that. But technology has changed. But like, where's the education around all of that? Well, it's on your website. Very clearly, you talk about the fact that times have changed in the type of couch you buy, the fabric that's there, the cleanability factor. Do I have to buy Scotchgard every time I buy a new couch? Nope, you don't. You just learn these sort of things, right? And I think that's where you're headed. So I think it's really lovely.
Yeah, very well said. Starting a new business, and I think everyone listening probably has a sense of what sort of risk factor I've had to undergo to get my hands on couch.com, the domain.
Yes.
I couldn't believe more heavily that we're really solving problems here for consumers. And I know that because every single time I ask somebody about where they got their last couch or something about their couch, there are things that they don't know that I do know. And I'm not like an expert couch. I mean, I kind of am, but like, I just learned all this stuff along the way. And I think this content, whether it has to do with cleaning your couch or shopping for a new one more specifically, this type of is just not out there and that readily available. So being that trusted source, that friend that everybody doesn't have in the furniture industry is sort of our mission. And I hope that we can accomplish it.
That's lovely. I'm going to wrap up for today, but I know we had a little chit chat kind of in the green room before recording. And I understand that kind of our next steps is like, hey, we have couch.com. If you're looking for a couch, that's a good place to go. But I think you have some giveaways and some certain things going on just to kind of like build your lead pipeline and kind of educate people about what you're all about. So I'll kind of pass the baton back to you. And what are we learning from today's episode? And then kind of what kind of next steps do you want to have?
Sure. I hope in today's episode that, you know, I think the point of any podcast is to like understand the landscape, feel part of a group, this group of e-commerce professionals, no matter where, what part of the industry you serve, just knowing that your issues are the same as anyone else's, are the same as a retailer's, and if you're, let's say, an agency. So I think that's really good. And then whenever I listen to a podcast of any nature, I always learn something new, or just an idea will spark. And you gave me one. I like the idea of Couch Finder. I wrote that down. I like that as a avatar for our AI. So thanks for that.
Steve. Yeah, no worries.
But yeah, and our, you know, we're currently doing a lot of co-branded giveaways right now with some really cool partners. That's just a marketing type strategy that we've used in the past. And I invite all the users to use that to their advantage. We're giving away a lot of free stuff.
Yeah.
So we have a giveaways page on our website. You can find it on the footer. It's very easy to find and they're super quick to enter. It might be a fun thing just to have.
Yeah.
At least take a look at or see how we're doing it and maybe enter.
Absolutely. Yep. Couch.com/giveaways. So I'll make sure that's in the show notes. And yeah, this has been an awesome episode. Like I said, as I mentioned at the top here, this is a different and unique episode for me because I haven't really done the Guy Raz style, how I built this kind of show. And that's kind of what today was. It really was about, hey, here's my journey. Here's where I was. Here's what I'm working on today. And if that can be helpful for you listening, then so be it. And I think at the end of the day, I think there is some great takeaways. I've got 2 pages of notes. And that's good for a podcast host to have 2 pages of notes because I'm learning too. So this is awesome. So thank you, Alex, for coming on the show. I really appreciate you taking time to get on the show and kind of just openly share. And I wish you like awesome luck into the future. And I'm sure we're both on the West Coast here in North America, you in LA and I'm in Vancouver. I'm sure at some point at an e-commerce meetup, we'll be able to say hello. And this is great.
That would be awesome. And thank you so much for having me, Steve. I do really appreciate it.
Pleasure. All right. Have a great afternoon. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you personally for being a loyal listener of E-commerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company powered by Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.